Well, good morning. It is Henry Harris, and it is Thursday, December 19th at 10 a.m., and welcome to another edition of the weekly Emunah telecall. Today's topic is the power of refusing to give up hope. The power of refusing to give up hope. What does that mean? So we'll start with our overview. What is this call about? What's the basic context of our conversation? We are exploring the simple truth behind our psychological experience. The basic idea of Emunah is an understanding of how there is a creator, a single power that is running all of the creation, everything, including our psychological landscape, which was 100% new to me. The idea that my psychological landscape was part of the divine providence of this world, that was new to me. And that has been very meaningful to me. I'll give you a very practical example. A couple of weeks ago, I had the opportunity to share some thoughts at the recent Innate Health Conference. And I found myself preparing for my comments that I was going to address to the group. And I found myself getting nervous. I found myself feeling anxious. And I couldn't process. Like, my mind was filled with... my mind was just filled with like worried and anxious and self-conscious thinking, and I couldn't come up with anything. And of course, I was starting to become troubled and bothered by the presence of that feeling, like, uh-oh, something is really wrong. Like, perhaps I'm not as qualified as I thought, or perhaps I'm not going to be able to be successful, or perhaps I don't know what. But I wanted to get out of the feeling. I couldn't get out of the feeling. And I started to get kind of more troubled by it. And then at a certain point, what I remembered was that, well, no, you're experiencing a certain kind of, you know, a certain landscape, a certain weather pattern of anxious thought, of anxious feeling, but that's just kind of the way it goes. You know, you're not the author of that feeling. It's not the circumstance that is authoring, sourcing that feeling. It's not indicative of your personality or of your skill set or of the event or of anything of that type. It's true. It might look like it is in the moment, because here I am preparing to address a group of people and feeling nervous about how it's going to go. And, you know, like, hello, that's kind of like 1 + 1 = 2. But I know something about that. You know, I invite people to just consider the logic of this, and consider that there is something curious, you know, there is something curious going on about how this works, that we can have, because I know that it's not every time I'm preparing to give a talk that I feel tremendous anxious feelings and nervousness. I know that. If I look a little more closely, I see that it's like, it's not always true that X circumstances causes Y feeling. And as I've come to appreciate that, I have a little more appreciation for the way in which my psychological experience has something to do with something bigger than just me. You know, like, it's really been one way of describing this whole discovery has been discovering how the world is more God-centered than me-centered, you know, like it makes more sense to explain the world and all of my experience of it by seeing and factoring in how a single power is energizing everything, than it does to explain it as like, well, I have certain capacities and I have certain strengths and I have certain weaknesses and everything is about me, and everything is about how I'm doing, and everything is about how well I'm suited for, you know, these circumstances or those circumstances. It just makes more sense to factor in that there's something other than me that is accounting for my emotional landscape. And of course, it was a bit of a relief to feel that. I mean, I can't say that it was the moment I remember that, it arouses a beautiful feeling of relief. Sometimes it doesn't arouse a tremendous feeling of relief, but either way, I really care about the truth of that. I care about the truth of that. And that's, to me, what this conversation is about. It's about caring about the truth, caring about the truth of our experience. The belief in a creator means an interest in and a commitment to see the truth about life, to see the truth about the creator's existence everywhere, anywhere, at all times, including in my psychological experience. And that's my defining core commitment, is I want to be a truth seeker. I certainly prefer having some feelings over other feelings. I certainly, and at times, you know, if you'd look at me, you'd see that, you'd think that that feelings are kind of totally important to me. I would acknowledge, but there's, to the degree that I've made more room in my life for the desire for truth, the value of truth, unconditionally, the more my life has kind of broadened and deepened and settled down, you know, that I'm more and more experiencing kind of an equilibrium that just allows me to be a lot more present to the opportunities and responsibilities in my life. So that's kind of, you know, this idea of emunah and how it translates into a psychological experience. So there I am. I'm preparing for a meaningful opportunity, responsibility. I'm getting a surge of insecure or anxious feelings. My initial instinct is to find a way out of them, you know, to find a way to clear away the cobwebs. But as I'm kind of reaching and grasping and batting away the cobwebs, I'm not doing it. I'm not getting anything accomplished. On the contrary, I'm kind of, you know, I'm feeling more dug in, more stuck. And there's a certain surrender. There's a certain surrender to a truth. It's a truth. It's a truth that I'm not, nor are the circumstances the cause of this emotional experience. It is owing to the truth about how the Creator is operating, how He is energizing and sustaining everything. There's nothing that is not being generated. There's no power of creation. No circumstance creates feelings inside of me. No skill or capacity creates feelings inside of me. Now, of course, we do have a role to play. We have a very, very consequential and significant role to play in our life and obviously in our psychological experience as well. But there's a limit. You know, there's a limit to the role we play in our psychological experience. And the role begins with a platform of truth. You know, what is true? That's the beginning of my role. The beginning of my role is what is true about this psychological experience and what cannot be true about it. It can't be coming from the event that's happening in X number of hours that I'm supposed to be speaking at. It can't be coming from whatever it is that I judge about myself to be good or bad or strong or weak. It can't be coming from those things, because there's only one way and there's only one source to anything being created, and there's only one moment and one way in which it unfolds, and that's now. That's now through this direct kind of divine live feed. That's the truth that I want to build my life on, and lo and behold, it really orients me to a whole set of resources, a whole set of wisdom, understanding that is present in me at all times. That wisdom, understanding becomes obscured. You know, that wisdom capacity inside of me, inside of others, becomes obscured through my innocent misunderstanding until I wake up, until I notice, oh, wait a second, it doesn't go like this. So that's my preamble. That's my little intro. And now I introduce this week's topic as the power of refusing to give up hope. The power of refusing to give up hope. I heard a beautiful idea from Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson relevant to this week's portion that I want to illuminate. So we hear in this week's portion about Yosef and how he is confronted by an extraordinarily effective seductress. The wife of Potiphar is extraordinarily motivated to seduce Yosef. And our sages say that Yosef experienced incredible desire and temptation. and was within a hair's breadth of having succumbed. And yet the sages say that an image of his father appeared before him and aroused within him a resolve, and he thereby succeeded. He was able to pass the test. And the language that the Torah uses along the description of, you know, where Yosef is successful, it says, the verse says that Vatisa Eshes Adonav Es Eineha, the wife of his master lifted up her eyes, El Yosef, toward Joseph, Vatomer, and she said, Shichva Yimi, lie with me. And then the verse says, Vayimma Ein, and Yosef refused. He refused. Vayomer, and he said what he said to her. He explained to her, this is, I can't do it, right? Vayimma Ein, he refused. So what is that language? Where do we see that language of Vayimma Ein? We see, like, think about it. Yosef is, he's young, he's alone, he's completely cut off from his family. And this is not just that he's, you know, he's not just studying in yeshiva for a year in Israel with a phone and a, you know, and his going home for Pesach. Like, he's really alone, you know. I mean, he doesn't know where, when, and how he's ever going to encounter his family again. He's basically been sold into servitude in a caste system. You know, there's no, according to the laws and the norms of that world, there's no emerging from that caste. You know, he's a slave. And the opportunity for despondency, for feelings of loneliness, for feelings of kind of, I've missed the boat in life, you know, I would think would be relatively strong. And now he's confronted by this incredibly appealing moment's desire, you know. And think about it. Think about the where and when and how we fall in our own kind of bad habits. You know, we all have our kind of, you know, either bigger or smaller modes of escape where the stresses and the insecurities of our life feel strong and we kind of look for a refuge. We look for some relief from it. You know, that's kind of how it works. You know, everybody out there is getting these hits of feelings, of feeling down, of feeling discouraged, of whatever it is. And sometimes in our innocent misunderstanding, it looks like they're unbearable. It looks like we have to find refuge from them. It looks like we have to run away from them. And then lo and behold, we have our habits. We have our little mini escapes or our bigger escapes. And Yosef is, certainly there's a recipe for his discouragement. And now he's got this incredible opportunity to kind of run away from that, you know, whatever those darker feelings might be. But he says, but the verse says, Vayimayin, he refuses to give in. He refuses to succumb to that kind of like, look, there's nothing for you in this world. It's hopeless or it's overwhelmingly painful. Just get what you can get right now. That's kind of the voice as I see it in the, you know, that's a little bit of the underlying voice in how we get drawn into our habits and our escapes. It's like, look, you can't get what you really want in life. At least get, you know, this moment's kind of, you know, perception of pleasure. It's really an escape, but at least get that, you know. And the verse says Yosef refused. He refused to give in to that kind of extraordinarily narrow world where there's no real hope. So might as well just get this, right? And Rabbi Jacobson asks, like, well, where did that come from? Where did the Vayimayin, where did that power of refusal, of refusing to give up hope, where did it come from? So he points out that there was a prior Vayimayin in the portion. There was a, when the brothers plotted when they did what they did with Joseph, they presented a bloodied tunic, right? His colorful tunic. They presented it to Yaakov. And they said, is this your son's cloak? We found it, you know? And then Yaakov, of course, drew the conclusion that he's been killed. And all of this children try to comfort Yaakov. And it says, hold on. And it says, right, Yaakov tore his garments and tied sackcloth around his waist. He mourned many days for his sons. And it says all his daughters and sons tried to console him. But Vayimayin lehisnachem, he refused to be comforted. Now, on one level, the word lehisnachem means to be comforted, but he refused to kind of change his mind. And in that sense, Rabbi Jacobson said, you know, as parents, as educators, or as people that we see people that we love, we see people struggle. We see people get lost in their own world, in their own experience of insecurity, in their own sense of discouragement. And it can be difficult not to kind of buy in, you know, not to kind of feel our own powerlessness and to conclude, look, I can't change him. He's got his habit, no matter how many times I've told him, no matter how many times I've encouraged him, no matter how much I've done, this person is kind of stuck. And it is so tempting to give in to that perception of hopelessness. And the people around us, our child, our student, or the loved ones that we care about in our lives, whether they acknowledge it or they don't acknowledge it, they sense that. They sense our sense of having given up hope. They feel it on a core kind of ruchni level. They sense it, but Yaakov didn't do that. Yaakov refused to give up. And it was the very power of his refusal to give up hope that endowed that there was a spiritual connection between him and Yosef. And Yosef was Yosef drew from that. Yosef experienced what does it mean that the image of his father came before him in that moment? How does that work? Like, in what way how does a person get the image of his parent before him in a moment of test? Because a parent is connected to a child, a spouse is connected to a spouse, a teacher is connected to his student, and any person is connected to another person that he loves. That when I acknowledge, what did Yaakov do? He experienced this extraordinary circumstance of loss. You know, like the son has been ripped up to shreds and he's dead. But there was something about him that held on to the idea that, like, I don't know the truth. I don't know all there is. I can see what I see before me, but I'm not ready to kind of camp out in that experience of hopelessness. Like, I know that my feelings are telling me about this moment's divine live feed. I know that I can't draw absolute conclusions about my feelings about the truth of the world, about the truth of my relationship, about the truth of my child, my student, my spouse, anything. I can't. My feelings are not proof positive, verifiable information. I'm not saying that they're irrelevant. I'm not saying that we don't have reason to take into consideration the feelings that we get, but certainly we don't lurch after them into a zone of hopelessness. Yaakov refused to give himself over to hopelessness. And it was that power of standing in that spiritual space, that simple truth, that aroused and endowed Yosef with a similar capacity. You know, think about the people that we love. I think about my children. They don't know everything there is to know about their internal world. They don't understand the truth. They live inside of the truth of this wisdom. They have this wisdom inside of them, but they don't see it clearly. They don't necessarily fully understand how their feelings they're getting hits of feelings. They're getting surges of feelings. They don't understand how that works, and it's not clear to them, and it's quite frightening at times. It's quite frightening to get surges of impatience or surges of boredom or surges of insecurity or fear, you know, and it's normal for them to become frightened and alarmed and kind of looking to battle those things or run away from those feelings. That's normal. But to the degree that I can stand in a quiet space of truth, some recognition of the truth, forget about the quiet space. I might feel quite agitated myself, but even the tiniest recognition on my part that I refuse to buy the truth that this feeling indicates something absolutely real. There's a real hopelessness about this hopeless feeling. How else to explain my hopeless feeling except that it's truly a hopeless situation? To the degree that I sense that, it is fortifying. It's connecting to emuna. It's connecting to this simple truth, and it reverberates. It's a place of it's a standing that is significant, and it ripples out into the world and certainly into the lives of the people that I'm close to. And that's where Yosef got his vayimayin. That's where, of course, he had his own choice. I'm not saying that he didn't exert an extraordinarily powerful choice that he's called Yosef HaTzadik. But the more we appreciate how this truth works, the more we can see a parent can be a resource for her child, even though he doesn't control his children's worldview and experience. A spouse can be a source of a contribution to his spouse or her spouse, even though they don't have control over the spouse. We are connected, and our clarity and our understanding makes a difference.